What would you do if you started to disappear? At the age of 45, Lori Sachs, an actress and mother, had a reputation as the quickest wit in the room. At the age of 46, she began forgetting words, and soon she could barely speak. The documentary film Looks Like Lori, Sounds Like Lori captures 1 year in her journey with frontotemporal dementia, a little understood disease that strikes people in the prime of life. Looks Like Lori, Sounds Like Lori will screen at the Scoville Memorial Library in Salisbury, Connecticut at 7 p.m. this Friday, April 24th. The film is directed and co-produced by Pamela Hogan, an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, journalist, media executive, and personal friend of the film subject, Lori Sachs. Pamela Hogan, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
So before we talk about the movie, I'd like you to tell me how you met Lori.
Lori and I were part of our two-year-old sons were part of a playgroup in the neighborhood in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and the two boys just made a beeline for each other the first day of the playgroup, and then I met her son's, you know, the son's mom, and we just really, it was sort of love at first sight, both for the moms and for the boys.
When did you start noticing her decline?
I would say it was about 8 years later that she started, we would meet for coffee, as we always did, and I remember one day in particular, I felt like I was doing all the talking, and that was so unusual for Lori. I mean, you would meet her for coffee, and it would just be, you know, you'd be playing off of each other and laughing and sharing stories and talking over each other, and she was so quiet, and I said to her, am I boring you? And she said, no, I'm just in my head. And then that happened again about a month later. She and her husband came over for dinner, the kids. She seemed quiet, and the next day when I called her, she said, Eric says I was really quiet last night. You know, did you notice? So that's how I started seeing it, being more quiet.
She wasn't really noticing herself. She had to check in with people that she knew?
Well, I think she was getting, you know, Eric was giving her some reality check and trying to figure out what was going on and what she could articulate. And meanwhile, none of us knew this, but he did start getting some neurological testing going. He handled it in a very private way. I think he was respecting Lori's privacy. It wasn't known whether this was a disease or whether it was progressive, or it could have been anything. It could have been a reaction to some medicine that she took. You know, so I think he was being low-key about it and not telling everybody that there might be a problem and kind of letting us all feel our way. And then she started doing kind of stranger things, and then all the girlfriends started then talking with each other and saying, have you noticed this, and have you noticed this? And it kind of all came to a head at Eric's 50th birthday party when all of their nearest and dearest were gathered in their house for this festive party, and it came time for Lori to make the toast, and all she said was, here's to a wonderful husband and a wonderful father. And that was never something Lori would have done. She would have, you know, held the floor and had us laughing hysterically with stories about Eric, and it was just, we all just looked at each other and said, what is going on? And then we all started talking at the party privately and realizing that something really was wrong.
And how did you decide to make the film?
Well, I certainly didn't decide to make the film. That's the last thing I would have suggested at that point. I was just scared stiff for my friend. And
right,
and,
of course. No, I didn't mean to suggest that it was your opportunity.
Yeah.
But it did come to you, and tell us about how that process happened.
So the way it came about was that I knew that Lori, people told me, oh, there's this wonderful mom at school, Connie, and that Connie's daughter was best friends with Lori's daughter, and that Connie, even though she really hadn't known Lori before, was starting to play a role. I started to hear from the moms that, oh, did you know that Connie's got a library project going with Lori at school? And, you know, and I just started hearing that Connie was a new person in Lori's life who was really kind of stepping up, but I'd never met Connie. And then one day, I remember I was taking a cab across town, and my phone rang, and I saw that it was Lori, and I picked it up and said, hi, Lori. And she said, Pam, talk to Connie. And she handed the phone to Connie. And Connie said, explain to me that they were having lunch and that Connie had come up with this idea that since Lori was loved to tell her story and she, you know, she would write about things that had happened to her and she was an actress, but that now since she was having difficulty writing and speaking, maybe she would think it would be fun to do a film because she could communicate in that way. And Lori as soon as those words came out of Connie's mouth, Lori picked up the phone and called me, which was her way of saying, why don't you two do this together? So we met the next morning for coffee, the three of us. To my surprise, Lori ran the meeting. She showed up on time, beaming, happy, energetic, and opened up her date book and started pointing to the names of people that she wanted in the film. So Connie and I just said, okay, I guess we're doing this. It was kind of like Lori was steering the ship, which is kind of what happened then in the year that followed. Lori kind of led the way. And her husband, Eric, also, we would talk with them every week and say, well, what's going on this week? And when would you think it would be good for us to come by, you know, with the camera? And she would, you know, kind of give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down. That's how we moved forward.
So there were times that she would say, not right now. I don't want to have the camera around now.
It would be more that she just wouldn't respond. So you wouldn't really know if she didn't want the camera there,
course,
but we
right.
wouldn't push. We just wouldn't push. Yeah.
We should probably explain the ultimate diagnosis, which is kind of an umbrella diagnosis for a confusing result, is a frontotemporal dementia, which is a, as you say, an umbrella term for a group of disorders that affect the brain. And it's usually earlier onset than Alzheimer's and moves very quickly. So it was, after a time, hard to know, and obviously you'll correct me if I'm observing wrong or missing anything, but it's hard to know how she really felt about anything because she couldn't find words, so often parroted the last things that were said to her, so you weren't sure if she was just agreeing because she was kind of latching on to what she last heard.
It's true. She often could not come up with original words. When she did, you'd kind of go, wow, mm-hmm. I can't believe she came out with that. But basically, as the year went on, she would listen to words that were spoken, and then she'd rearrange them and kind of deliver them almost like an actress, which she was an actress, doing a line read. So she'd add body language and intonation to try to point you towards what she was trying to get across. But it could take an hour. If you were really trying to work on a complex idea with her, you know, let's say find out how she felt about the fact that she now had a caregiver, something complicated, it could take an hour to really kind of feel like you were starting to get what it was that she was trying to say, because she'd say yes when she meant no, and then she'd say no when she meant yes, and then she'd correct herself. And so it was kind of chaotic.
It also seemed like a few times that she would say yes, but like you said, by adding a tone of voice to try to convey it, it would be like sarcastic yes. She was like, yeah, that's great. You know, it's like she was like, no, it's not.
I love it that you picked up on her sarcasm, because that definitely was one of her communication tools, even when she didn't have a lot of words. She'd roll her eyes, you know, or she'd, you know, really kind of deliver something with this just drip of sarcasm, you know, and she'd use body language and in ways that sometimes you'd walk away and you'd think you'd really, you know, had a great conversation with Lori. But if you looked back on the words spoken, very few words were spoken. She was just finding all these other ways to communicate.
What was the total progression, like from the first time you noticed the shift when she was quiet meeting for coffee until she passed away?
Okay, so I'd say it was about a year after she started being quiet that she really was profoundly changed in a way that you couldn't be in denial anymore and say, oh, this is just, you know, a slight depression or something like that. So a year into the quietness, we all knew something was going on and she was having neurological tests, but nothing was known yet. And then that's when we started making the film.
Mm-hmm.
The point that we started making the film, all that was known was that she had expressive aphasia, which means difficulty retrieving words. But it may not mean that there's anything, you know, wrong with your thinking and your judgment. It might just be a word processing thing, which can often be corrected.
Uh-huh.
So that was a year in, and then we filmed for a year. She went to assisted living shortly after that year of filming, a couple months later. She was in assisted living for 2 years, and we did a final shoot there. And 8 months later, Lori died.
Because I'm going to ask what I hope is not an insensitive question, but the actual death is, like, she was 52 when she died, which is not at all old. So the dementia caused her early demise?
Yes. FTD is a wasting of the frontotemporal lobe of the brain, the part of the brain between the forehead and the ears. So it's different than Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's affects memory, and it's kind of cobwebs in a different part of the brain. FTD is this wasting. Almost, it actually might be related to ALS, to Lou Gehrig's disease. So as the brain wastes, changes start to happen very, very quickly. And, you know, often the patient stops being able to really move or walk or swallow or, you know, the body functions start to shut down. It's a nightmare of a disease.
Yeah, it's terrible. Do they know? Do we know? Not obviously, I don't know, or I wouldn't be asking. But is it known if it is genetic, or what? Are there any causes known?
As I understand it, it's thought that about 40% of people with frontotemporal dementia have some genetic predisposition towards it. And it doesn't mean that if you have a genetic marker, you will get it, but that 40% of those who do get it have some genetic marker, and not necessarily meaning that someone in their family has had FTD, mm-hmm. but might have had a related disease like ALS, which is thought to be related. But the vast majority of people who are diagnosed with FTD, it's simply not known why it is that they got it. And so it's just really a great need for more research. There's no treatment right now, and there's no cure, but there are the beginnings of some clinical trials, and there's just a great need for more research.
As you say, there's no cure or treatment. There's no medication. There's no therapy. So people, as of now, have no real hope of improving, and the people around them have to live with that too.
Exactly. And so what happens now when you're diagnosed with this is you just need to rely, as you see in the film, on your family and your friends, on your support groups. And there are FTD support groups, which are a tremendous help for families who have someone with this terrible disease. But they're not in every location. But there's a great organization, the Association of Frontotemporal Dementia, which is just full of resources, and no matter where you are in the country, they can link you up, if not with an in-person support group, to share, you know, feelings and strategies with other families who are going through the same experience, but they could also link you with social media support groups, or even with support groups by telephone. And I think that's really something that is so key for families, because what they go through with this disease, when someone's in their prime, they're raising children, they're the breadwinner of the family, it's a very different experience, I think, than with someone in more senior years, in retirement. Of course, both are terribly painful, but it's a special set of challenges and sadnesses and things to cope with that the families can really help each other.
Looks like Lori, sounds like Lori will screen at the Scovel Memorial Library in Salisbury, Connecticut. Pamela, you will be there along with Connie Schulman for people to see the film and speak with you about it. And I thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the screening.
Looks like Lori, sounds like Lori will screen at the Scovel Memorial Library in Salisbury, Connecticut at 7 p.m. this Friday, April 24th. For links to more information about the screening, the film, and frontotemporal dementia, visit wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.